Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello and welcome to Fork Tales. Today, our guest is Jeff Broadhurst, CEO of Eaton Park Restaurants. Eaton Park celebrated its 75th anniversary earlier this year. We'll talk about that. Jeff has nearly 60 locations in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. Today, we're going to talk about the success of Eaton Park brand, the importance of taking care of your team, and some of the best things on Eaton Park's menu. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Michael. Good to see you again. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you know, in full disclosure, Jeff and I are old friends, so this should be a lot of fun. And I will say this, from the day I met you, and I still remember the day I met you, your attitude and smiling, you're always happy and you always have a positive attitude, even when things are not great. But it's a gift and I respect the hell out of that. I just want you to know that. So
thank you. That's what I try to do. Try to be positive.
So tell us a little bit about Eaton Park, yourself, and maybe, you know, how you became part of this organization.
Sure. Good question, Michael. We've actually now just been around 75 short years. We celebrate on June the 5th, believe it or not. So that's a miracle in its own part, just being in the restaurant business 75 years. It's been a family business since the 70s. And actually, my father came to join the organization as treasurer back in early 70, and then also took the company over in the early 80s. So it's been a family business since. And I actually came here in 96. And I could talk a little bit more about that for sure, but I was in the investment business prior, working for a fabulous company called Federated Investors, which I just loved, another family business back when I was there. And I came over in 96 to join the family business. I'm sure we'll get into that, but loved it ever since.
Yeah, that's awesome. How did that help you? How did the investment thing kind of play into a restaurant? I mean, two very different things.
It is very different. And, you know, some of it was just getting some experience somewhere else. I came out of grad school and, as a family business, some folks go right into the family business. We've always been one to say, you know, it's always good to get some experience somewhere else. So I went to work for Federated, very different business for sure. But I learned a little bit more about the family type environment with the Donahues and just a great family in the Pittsburgh area. I also learned what it was like to work with other people that may not be family. And I still, to this day, one of my dear friends is a guy by the name of Jim Hamilton. He was my boss. And I still to this day is my favorite and best boss ever. And he taught me so much. And I can still think through some of the things that I learned from Jim in a very different atmosphere, right? Investments versus hospitality business. And actually, a couple of the things I know you didn't even ask, but I was just sitting here thinking about Jim getting ready for this. I mean, two of the things that I still to this day remember from Jim, he was always there during those difficult days. And I was a salesperson back then. And, you know, you don't get that big sale. You're pretty bummed. Jim was always there for me. And he'd be, okay, what can we do? And it was always we. Not what did you do wrong? What can we do better the next time to get that sale? So he was always there when you had those tough days. And then probably just as important on those wins, he was there to celebrate you. And I can still remember we would always go to Dairy Queen, Jim and I, back then. We had cell phones. Dairy Queen always had a cell phone in the parking lot. We would always go and get a Blizzard and celebrate our big wins. And we might have some beverages at night. But during the day when we heard about that trade, we'd always stop at Dairy Queen. So just a great guy and learned a lot.
That's awesome. And it's like, it's a good point though. Like, so good bosses are like coaches, right? You know, they give you criticism, but in a positive fashion, kind of put you in a positive way out there to win again and set you up for the next time, you know, your next at bat. So, again, and I always say that you've always had that attitude and a very, like, very positive attitude. And I think that's contagious. I think that's something that's super important in any business and any leadership position. Now you went, and I know this about you. You went to Cornell, right? And that's known for hospitality. So it was that a coincidence that you ended up there, or is it one of those things where after, you know, like, hey, maybe I should think about this because of the family business?
No, you know, in high school I worked, and I worked with my two brothers as well. We all worked in the business, so I had some inkling that I might be interested in the restaurant business, the hospitality business at some point. And I was fortunate to get into Cornell. I mean, this day and age, I'd never get in. so much more difficult than when I got in. But it was a great school. There was a lot of good hospitality schools out there. I think Cornell's absolutely up there. So I was pretty fortunate to go there and met a great advisor by the name of Tom Kelly, led me in the right direction through my 4 years there and met some just fabulous people. So it was good.
That's awesome. So, I mean, obviously, the one thing that I know a lot of companies have in common, especially ones that tie into the YPO organization, they're family owned, family led. There's challenges. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how did it all come about? You know, you get out of Cornell, you go the investment route, and you get pulled back in. It's like the mob. You get pulled back in. So, talk a little bit about that.
Sure. And you mentioned family businesses and challenges in the same sentence there. So. And that's typically what people talk about, family businesses, challenges. And, you know, there are challenges in any business. But there's a lot more positives. And I'm fortunate right now. I work with my two brothers, and Brooks and Mark, which is great. We've got a great relationship both in the business and outside the business. So I love it. And, you know, when you talk about the challenges, there's challenges. And I'm not going to dive into all those because people in family business understand those. But yeah. But there's so many positives, and especially at some point, I'm sure we'll talk about COVID, only because COVID and the restaurant business was a difficult time. But, you know, in COVID, it was really nice having family there, dealing with what we went through and every business. I mean, that was the one thing that you really needed, people that you trusted and respected and in many cases loved, to be there by your side as you're navigating something like that, which is one, and hopefully we never see anything like that again. So that's really some of the positives. And you know what? We're fortunate that we're aligned on what we think. I mean, our purpose in our company is to create a smile. So you mentioned smiling at the beginning, but that's what we do each and every day, to try to create a smile, both in the communities, actually not both, but in all fronts, communities, our guest faces, our team members' faces. But most importantly, every morning we challenge ourselves that when we get up in the morning, all of our team members, we get a smile when we get up. We got to bring that fun energy to our jobs each and every day. And you can't do it every day, right? But at the same time, you try to. And our family, we challenge each other on that as well. That, you know, how are we going to continue to create those smiles within the organization day in and day out?
Well, I mean, again, it precedes you. And I think that's fantastic. It obviously goes through your company. Talking about smiles, I mean, you have this hat. You want to share the hat? That'll bring a smile.
Oh, my hat. Yeah. So that's what I do. This crazy hat that I created, someone built for me. This is our 75th, and which we're actually started on. We celebrate on June the 5th. We're celebrating all year. And then I've got this in the background. So it's just a fabulous hat. I love this thing.
It's very, very understated.
Isn't it understated? Yes, it is. But I wore that all day. And press conference. Oh, it was so much fun. And now we get to do it for the next, we got 9 months left to still enjoy our 75th. So
that's
it
awesome.
Is, and, you know, get back to talking about Jim Hamilton at the beginning and celebrating. And that's, you know, what we take it seriously, that when we have good days, you know, let's celebrate. And no, maybe not as big as building hats on the doggone day, but, but at the same time, trying to have fun. And because the hospitality business can be difficult for sure. So, when our new management come in, I tell them one thing: you can never have too much fun in the role. Create enough energy. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, you know, it's funny. We talked about your brothers being in the business, which is great. And it's so cool that you guys are all aligned, because, you know, you always hear about like different kinds of infighting and stuff. And it's great that you guys all have that sort of attitude and vision and everything. Your dad started. I think I read somewhere your mom gave you some of your best advice, though, about treating people.
She did. Yeah, he probably did read that somewhere. Yeah, my mother, and I was fortunate when I joined here, my mom and dad were both working in the business, and they're both still on the board. Interestingly enough, we have a board meeting this week, which they'll be there for that. My mother was always talking about, you know, treat people like you want them to treat you.
Right.
And that's awesome. And she would remind us that, I mean, back at a very early age. And that's what it's about in the hospitality business, right? Welcoming people into in many cases, your house, meeting our restaurants. So. And she also oversaw our corporate giving when she was here as well. So giving back to the communities in which we serve, and that's a big part of our organization.
No doubt. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into that for sure, because you guys are like amazing when it comes to that. And I mean, it starts with the smiley cookies and it goes all the way through all the different programs that you have. And I think that's fantastic. You mentioned COVID a moment ago, and COVID's affected a lot of companies in a lot of different ways. And I hate talking about it, but I think the reason it's worth talking about is because it has painted a brush over our companies, and it's forced us. They say, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. It forced us to do things, all of us. You know, as you know, I have several advertising and marketing agencies under the Pavone Group, and one of ours was Varsity, which was senior living, which was senior living was like basically shut down during that whole time. So that business, our agency and our clients were just in turmoil. On the other side, we have Quench, which is CPG food and beverage. And that was like the greatest sampling program in the history of earth. If you put it in a can or a bag or a pouch, people bought it, put it in their pantry, and they ate it, right? They just were like they own lockdown, right? And then on the other side, you have the restaurants. And, you know, we have an agency called Vigor that markets restaurants. It was a really tough time. You opened Butler. Talk about that.
We did. Yeah, we opened a brand new restaurant, spent a couple $1 million in the middle of COVID, and people thought we were crazy.
Yeah.
And but we did it to really put a stake in the ground. And I mean, back in May of 2020, we were just about ready to, and we were close to closing down. I mean, at that point, it was, permanently, and it was difficult. And then we made it through that period of time. It wasn't, things weren't booming by any means, but we had already had plans to build that. There was a lot of conversation. Should we not build it? Should we? And I made the conscious decision that, you know, we're building this thing, putting a stake in the ground. We're a long-term, that's another advantage of family businesses. We take, we have a long-term view, really do. And we wanted to show the community, we wanted to show our team members. Team members are the most important part of our organization, that we were going to be okay. And put a stake in the ground, this beautiful brand new building. And at that point, it was up in Butler, which is about 45 minutes north of Pittsburgh. And you know what? Looking back, it worked.
Yeah,
for sure. Restaurant was successful. Folks realized we were going to be okay. And we were able to really have a big halo from this brand new restaurant. Because back then, no one was building restaurants. They were like, okay, what are we going to do?
Right.
So it was...
people were folding up their tents and figuring out, you know...
It was a leap of faith, for sure. Yeah. But you know what? You got to do that every once in a while. Yeah. And it worked.
What's cool is, again, privately held family business, and you know we're certainly privately held, and you're able to make those decisions. And I found like through life, I'll say as an entrepreneur, sometimes the biggest risks you make, that's really the juggernaut. That's where shit happens, if for lack of a better word. If you're super conservative the whole way around or the whole way along, and again, I'm not just a cowboy here, but I mean, if you're super conservative all the time and just really kind of measured in everything you do and don't ever take those chances, the odds of you like growing or having anything exceptional happen are very slim. And so, I the Butler thing to me is super smart in that. You know, and again, hey, look, this is the ad guy talking. Like you could do, we could say, hey, do marketing, put press releases out. But what you did was instead of words, you'd shown it. You literally put it in the ground and showed people the strength of the brand and the commitment to the community. And I think that goes further than, I'll say, honestly, any ad or press release or social media campaign that a brand can do. So I think that's brilliant. Other thing you did that I have, it's going to sound funny, something very new and innovative for restaurants. Drive-through windows. Talk about like you're a sit-down restaurant. You put a drive-through window in. So that's why it's unique for that, because obviously drive-throughs aren't new. But talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was back in I guess we're about 12 years ago now, and it was something that, and this is, we talk a lot about sort of failing in some cases and learning from them. There were these things, if you remember, you know, from fast food restaurants, they all have them, but there's not a lot of full service restaurants that have got these pickup windows like we do. So back then in 2008, probably 2010, we were testing some of these spots where you pull up, a sensor goes off. And what's best about those things is actually what's worst about them is on a rainy day, and in Pittsburgh, we get a little rain. so on a rainy day, if you're in the middle of the parking lot and someone comes out to bring your food, you got to put your window down. You get soaked. Then they leave, bring your food back, you put your window down again, you get soaked again. It's not a very pleasant experience. So we quickly realized this is not an ideal situation. Regrouped, took about a year and said, you know, why couldn't we just punch holes in the side of our buildings? Not all of them, but many of them.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. It's convenient, especially for our demographics, where we have a lot of parents with little kids. You know, they're strapped in the back seat.
Sure.
They don't want to get out of the car.
Right.
We've got a lot of seniors. And in many cases, they want to take food home too, but they don't want fast food. They want a well-rounded experience and be able to choose from a broad range of menu items, which we have at Eaton Park.
No doubt.
So we spent a year reformulating this sort of pickup experience. And that's when we put in those windows. And now we've got about 90% of our restaurants have got pickup windows in them.
But that again, taking a chance, trying something, you know, that had to help in COVID, right? I mean, the takeout business. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's what I mean. It was brilliant. And where it seemed like maybe a little bit out there, you know, in 2008 for COVID, it just kind of came together because it was a.
I can't say I was predicting COVID. I'm not going to take credit. We did this for COVID by any means, but.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So now the other thing, and I guess I think it's like 60% of your business. Let's talk about Parkhurst Dining and your role in that and talk about that a little bit. It's really an interesting, massive company.
It is. Yeah. So we've got Eaton Park Hospitality Group, and that's the parent company. And then we've got the restaurant divisions, which are made up of three different brands. And then we've got Parkhurst. And as you said, it's about 60%. Parkhurst was started in 1996, and that's actually when I left Federated and came back to Pittsburgh. I was living in Chicago, which I love Chicago, and came back to Pittsburgh to join the family business to really start this brand new startup company focused on private colleges, universities, and higher-end corporate dining locations. And to this day, that's still our focus. We're in 14 states, so we're much broader than the overall restaurants. And it's been a great sort of add-on and diversification effort for sure. And the reason why we did it, because you're probably going to ask that next, I'm guessing, is because everyone asks, you know, why'd you do it? We wanted to stay in a business that we knew, food, serving guests. At the same time, we didn't want to take Eaton Park national. We wanted to stay regional. Now, looking back on it, restaurants are in three states, Parkhurst is in 14 states. So we've brought it beyond, we're broader than just sort of this local regional geography. But that was it. It was a diversification play for sure on focusing on things we knew of how to create great food, authentic food. Also, we know how to take care of guests and be proactive and understand what they want. And that's how we started Parkhurst. And I came back and helped get that started, which was really fun.
Yeah. And that's another thing. It's like a lot of times, you know, businesses will just sort of, for lack of a better word, get conservative, sit on the laurels like, hey, we've got this good business. We're successful. Let's just do this. No, let's take a chance and do this and start something new. And I think that's a credit to you and your family and just the entrepreneurial spirit, which I just personally love. And you've talked a lot about how the Eaton Park formula to Parkhurst Dining and vice versa, how they go back and forth. You're going to learn something in the restaurant, you can apply here, and something that you can learn here and apply back to the restaurant. So they do sort of act as a little bit of an R&D for you, don't they?
They do. And you know, that's really in our space. Obviously, we've got competitors in the contract dining space and really good competitors, but really none that are in the restaurant business. And there is a different mindset. And we talk about that a lot. You know, we've got one leadership team in the organization, our steering team. It's broad across all the divisions. So each and every day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we have a daily call. They're all on it talking about different divisions. So people are sharing best practices, monthly meetings, they're all together. And the reason what's more unique, what's different about the restaurant business than the contract dining business is in the restaurant business, we compete for our guests each and every day. People have to eat, right?
Yeah.
They don't have to eat in our restaurants.
No.
And in many cases, you hear people say, and I've got two college kids, you know, the college kids have to eat in the cafeteria. They don't have to eat in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, parents have probably bought the meal plan. They probably should, but they don't have to. And we bring that exact same mindset to our contract dining accounts as our restaurants. And that's really unique for us. Our students don't have to eat in the dining halls. We want them to eat in the dining hall. How are we creating that great experience? And it starts with food and service with the best team members in the business. And that's really what differentiates us with that restaurant background in the contract dining space.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a fantastic point because, you know, at Quench, at our agency, we've been actually hired over the years by some of the large food service contractors to create what I'll say are restaurant-like brands so that they can sort of apply them to, say, a college or, you know, but to your point, you run restaurants and there is a huge difference. Everybody that does the restaurant out there can roll their eyes because it's a tough thing. And, you know, you're on the front lines, you're dealing with customers and dealing with problems and it's just a different animal. It's more than just putting a logo up and making a hamburger or something like that. Right.
No, you're exactly right.
Yeah, it's a very good point. It's very simple, but it's a very good point. You guys came from the restaurant side. That makes a big difference. So, okay,
you know,
obviously,
because you put together your big trends thing every year. She's the best. I always look forward to that. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, well, because we do the food trends every year. We've been actually written up a couple of times in Fast Company for them, and I appreciate you mentioning that. We've done them for over 15 years, and the only reason it's kind of funny because again, one of those things where you didn't do it on purpose. we did the original Food Trends, I guess it was like 16 years ago, because we had just launched our agency Quench, and our job was to be experts, right? And I'm like, well, just because we have clients in the food business or their food brands or CPG food brands doesn't mean we're necessarily the experts. We're just an advertising agency. So we wanted to get deeper, and we did these trends. And we learned a lot, and it was really cool. I'm like, well, let's give them away. And so I just took the show on the road. I'd go around to any food company in the country that would listen. And I'll never forget the first time I did it. We went to Reckitt Benckiser, and that was back when Reckitt had French's Mustard, Frank's Hot Sauce, and Bullseye Barbecue. So they were in the food business at the time. They're no longer in that food brand, in the food branch. I went in there and I thought I was going to get thrown out. I got about 30 people. I did this trends presentation. They were like, what's this knucklehead ad guy going to talk about food trends for? And when we got done, this gentleman, his name was Paolo. I never forgot him. He slammed his fist on the table. He goes, why the hell isn't our agency bringing us this kind of information? And I never forgot that. It was really a pivotal moment for us in that regard, and we stayed with it. So I appreciate you saying
that. Thanks for staying with it, because it's good. Yeah,
I appreciate it. Really, so obviously I'm a branding guy, and you know, it's typical of a lot of businesses. You know, Parkhurst is obviously a huge chunk of the company revenue overall, but the Smiley Cookie, I mean, that is the brand. I mean, you know, you have it on your hat. I mean, that's what people know you guys as. And when I met you, like, I didn't know. I knew of certainly Eaton Park. I knew of Smiley. I knew all that. I didn't know about the rest of the companies and any of the other restaurants, which we can talk about. But so Talk about Smiley. How did it come to be? And why is it such a big part of the Western PA culture?
Yeah. So the Smiley Cookie started, actually, my father grew up in a town called Titusville, Pennsylvania, which is a couple hours north of Pittsburgh. And actually, where oil was found in the United States, ironically, 260 plus years ago at this point. And he, every single day on his way home from school, he'd walk a couple blocks, he'd have a nickel, and he'd stop into a place called Warner's Bakery and buy a cookie, happened to have a smile on it. And so when he actually came back, moved to Pittsburgh, obviously started working for Eaton Park, and when he bought the company, he always thought back of that pleasant experience, because that was that one piece each and every day. Now, maybe school, some days school was good, some days it wasn't, but that was always the piece that put a smile on his face, buying that cookie on his way home.
That's awesome.
For a nickel. And then he went up and talked to Pop Warner and said, hey, could I borrow this to bring to my brand called Eaton Park? And he graciously agreed. So father actually sent somebody up there to learn how to make these, started bakeries in the restaurants. And ever since, now we give those out to all kids. If you go through our takeout product, if you get takeout, you always get a free cookie in the bag. And it's all about creating a smile. And that's really, he didn't, at that point, he wasn't thinking about our purpose of creating a smile, but that's what it's led into. And something as simple as that has led us to this create a smile. And Eaton Park's known, it's called the place for smiles, because that's what our tagline is. So.
And you guys have been true to that. I again, kudos to that. That's sticking with the brand. That's sticking with your core values and people first and all of that. I think it's just really... I mean, it's a great lesson. And I'll say this, it's not simple. It's not easy to do to stay with something, but it's just really great. And it's a very simple idea, but it is what you guys are all about. And it nails it. And sometimes the most obvious things are simple things. So now I got to ask you this.
Hey, you know what? We've also grown, and you talk about brand, and we've definitely taken that Smiley now and put in merchandise. Actually, you know what? Look at this. I even have my Smiley socks on. I wear these. I have multiple kinds of Smiley socks. Bro, it's like, you always wear socks with smiles on. I'm like, yeah.
You know, I'm kind of bummed. You know, one of our things is we're bulldogged, and I normally have socks with bulldogs on, but today I looked down. In fact, I was going between the black bulldog socks and I did a polka dot. So I don't have bulldog socks on, but
I was just close to being in the background too.
That's our thing. We're bulldogged. Like, our company's all about like winning on behalf of our clients and just being a bulldog and not giving up. So it's, you got to live the brand. It's got to permeate the company. And I think that's super, super smart. So back to Smiley. Smiley does like 250 appearances a year. I've seen him at hockey, baseball. He's all over the place. As a CEO, have you ever worn the Smiley, the mascot costume?
That's hilarious that you asked that, because I was just, that's funny. No, I've not, because I'm not sure I can fit in. Interestingly enough, in June, Smiley threw out the first pitch at a baseball game for the Pirates.
That's awesome.
And I was there, and I escorted Smiley to the mound. And I was literally sitting there like, gosh, I wish I could have this mascot costume on right now and throw out the pitch. Because no one has any idea who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible pitch. No one's making fun of you. And but no, I'm not. I got to get one that's made a little bit bigger. What I have done, Michael, is we do it every year. I just thought of this. we raise a lot of money for children's hospitals throughout our communities. And each year in our office, and I'm looking out here, we actually do a race, Smiley's Race, where we put the shoes, and there are these giant shoes that are two times as big as my foot, and we sprint around our office. It's a race, and you get a massive trophy, and we raise money, put $5 in. People trip and fall, run into walls with these things on. It's hilarious.
It's an HR nightmare, I'm sure, but.
Oh, it is. It is. I got injured once the first time. I cut my arm all up, fell into a wall. But it is hilarious, and it's all for Children's Hospital. We raise money. So Smiley's That's Shoe fantastic. Race, we call it. That's as close as I've got to the costume.
So you guys do a ton for the community, and so it's really awesome. You do it through the cookie sales. I know you're always doing different things. Talk a little bit about some of the community involvement stuff that you do.
Yeah, we do a lot, and that's a big part of our culture. It's a big part of who we are, as you said, and it started, my mother started that many years ago, and it just continued with a great team that we have. It's a combination of obviously giving money back to the communities in which we serve. A lot of it is around food. We give to each and every food bank in every single one of the communities. That starts there. We also do a lot of focus on volunteering and helping our team members volunteer in the communities. We just did a big Day of Smiles 3 weeks ago. We had a couple hundred folks go out to 8 different organizations and volunteer for the day. And I went to a women's shelter, which was awesome, and made lunch for the women there at the shelter. We did so many, there was over 100 and some folks that went out to these communities. We do that on a regular basis because that's a big part of who we are.
Yeah.
We've been fortunate. Our guests have supported us for 75 years, and we truly believe that we've got to find ways to give back. And our team members love doing it, and that's part of our culture. So,
Again, like your mom was on that years ago. It became in vogue for, I'll say, companies to get involved and be philanthropic, say 10 years ago, tie your brand to something that's important to the community, which is obviously a great thing to do. But your mom, your company, the culture, you guys have been in it. You've been a fabric of Western Pennsylvania and beyond for a long, long time.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Very
Thank
cool.
You.
And it doesn't stop. It's not just about, say, the community. You do the team member assistance program, which I'm really blown away by. Talk about that a little bit.
We do. We started this right after COVID, and it was an opportunity to set up a fund and to focus on really catastrophic events that our team members, because I think I mentioned at the beginning, I'm really proud of our team members. We've got almost 10,000 now. And I truly believe we have the best in the industry, the best in the business. But, you know, people have catastrophic things. I mean, house fires, car accidents, really dramatic things that nobody can really prepare for. I mean, how can you prepare for a house fire?
Right.
And to lose all your belongings. So we've set up this fund this year. The expectation, I was just chatting with a woman who runs it last week, we'll probably help over 45 team members this year in that fund.
It's fantastic.
And by giving grants that are given by team members. And it's really special. And you can make someone's day. And it obviously doesn't help when you have a house fire, but it helps them at least get their feet back under them a little bit by buying some simple things that they really need.
Right.
Immediately, too.
It's a great idea. So, I mean, I love the whole concept behind it. Because, I mean, again, you know, as a marketing agency, I always say our assets go out the door every day at 5 o'clock. Like, I don't have cookies. I don't have warehouses. I don't have widgets. I have people. That's it. So, I mean,
that's it. That's all we have.
It's super, super, super important. Super important. Now, on this, all this good stuff, and I want to stay on this good stuff because I'm actually kind of really impressed by this. You guys built this thing called Farm Source, and, you know, your restaurants, and again, I should preface it. Eaton Park is not just a breakfast, it's breakfast, lunch, dinner. I mean, so we're talking full service, a large menu. We have the porch. You can talk about that. We also have Hello Bistro. We have, I think there's 10 of those, I believe. So there's a few different concepts, 3 different concepts. But then you brought Farm Source also to literally to the table. Talk about that.
We did. So that started in 2002, and that was a really thought of my brother Brooks and gentleman by the name of Jamie Moore, who works here as well, thinking through, and as you know, you're in central Pennsylvania, I'm in Pittsburgh. Between Pittsburgh and central Pennsylvania, how many farms are there?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, incredible farmers that are passionate and are really good at what they do. We don't need to have all of our product brought from California. Some we do, but a lot of it is grown right here in Pennsylvania or in Ohio or in West Virginia. We spent a lot of time bringing that to fruition. The most difficult thing was the transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, getting the product from the farm to the distributor to us was very difficult. It wasn't set up. So we worked with our local produce companies and said, how are we going to do this? And since then, it's really become pretty routine. We do that in every single market we go to. How can we find a way to support those local? And it goes beyond just farmers now, too. Chocolatiers and honey. Sure. And we could go through all of this. So we broadened it to really giving back to the communities once again. The product's better, too. Putting it on a truck and bringing it across the country, it's fresh. And the supporting local people that are supporting, in many cases, our restaurants. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, plus, what a great message to send to the community. I mean, it's just, it's right on target. All right, so let's have some fun here. Now, we're going to challenge you on your restaurants.
We've not had fun already?
Well, I'm having a great time. I feel like I'm saying too many nice things about you, Jeff. I'm not used to this. Okay. I mean, when I see you, I'm not used to like all this praise, you know? So I got to keep it clean. We won't get into all the other side stories. But so on your menu, it's very diverse, obviously. So yes. I want your opinions. What's your best breakfast item on your menu?
I would say it's our scrambler, which I have typically every Saturday or Sunday when I'm in the office. It is incredible. It's the best breakfast sandwich out there. Although I love chocolate, so chocolate chip pancakes are they're not quite as exciting, but I just like the chocolate sort of I get to in the pancakes. So
very cool. Best burger.
Oh, that's easy. That's our super burger, which are fresh, never frozen. We just actually, that's another innovation I should have thought about. We just changed our super burgers. Fresh, never frozen patties. They're incredible. Double decker.
That's awesome.
Just special sauce. Awesome.
Yeah, I was quoted once in a podcast previously. The world has never gone bankrupt selling burgers in the restaurant.
No,
business, you know,
people love them.
People like burgers. Yeah, it's a good. That's a good.
So
move.
Do I.
Yeah, me too. I can't argue with that. You know. All right, you're known for your selection of daily soups. What's the best soup?
Potato. That's our most popular too.
Sounds Western PA to me. You know,
yes, got that it is. To it. Yeah. Western, yeah. Yes.
Best dinner entree.
That's probably our best. Probably our baked cod. And people don't look at us as a fish place, but we've got some of the best fish in the region. And our cod is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Flyers or penguins?
Oh, come on. That's impressive. The penguins. Who are the Flyers?
I thought you would jump through the screen on that one. I had to mix that one in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm an East Coast Pennsylvania guy. I'm a Philly guy. I bleed Philly, you know? And yes. But I know you do. I know you're all Pittsburgh. I respect that. So
I was at the Pirate game last night, actually.
Nice. Very cool. Well, I was watching the Phils, but then I jumped over to some other stuff that was on TV that we all know about. And a brawl broke out last night in Philadelphia. So I was bummed that I didn't stay on for the whole time. It was awesome. So I'm pretty excited about my Phillies. I'm pretty excited about them. So we'll see what happens. So, okay. You also have fresh baked pies. You're known for your pies as much as your cookies, I think. What's your best pie?
Best pie is strawberry. I mean, it's only seasonal, but we've got this incredible couple pounds of strawberry we put in this thing, a whipped cream, the special sauce, and it really has been around forever. It's awesome.
That sounds delicious. You know, it's funny on the pie thing. I took my wife out for her birthday on Sunday night, and I took her to a restaurant that we both love. It's a pretty famous restaurant actually in New Jersey called Stephen Cookies. It's in Margate, New Jersey. And her blueberry pie is unbelievable. And I don't know if she sits there personally with a syringe and like injects sugar in each blueberry. Unreal. I mean, I call it the happy meal. I have this whole thing. I know what I'm going to order before I get there. I think about it 3 days in advance. I got there and they're like, we sold our last pie for the season on Thursday. And this was Sunday night. Thursday was the last pie of the season. Anyway, I was heartbroken. No, she didn't get it. I mean, I know it was her birthday. I didn't get it. Yeah. you know, I would have blocked on that one. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm paying for dinner. I got this, my pie, you know,
it's your birthday.
So I was, you brought up the pie. It was devastating to me. I'm still
sorry.
Really,
I feel bad. Yeah. We don't have a blueberry. Otherwise I'd ship you one out.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. So anyway, shout out to Cookie, I guess. So what's next for Eaton Park? What's next on the agenda?
You know, there's a lot, Michael. We talk about that all the time as leadership team. And a lot of it right now is continuing to reinvest in the brand, 75-year-old brand, right? Mm-hmm. And in many cases, the easiest way to go out of business is to quit innovating. And in our case, right now, and I'm looking this direction because we've got a restaurant we just tore down in Bridgeville, Pennsylvania, putting up a brand new store there. It was an old, tired store. We've been working on this for like 10 years. I'm so glad we're going to get this thing finally done. And then we've got 12 other restaurants this year that we'll renovate. In the next 2-3 years, every single one of our restaurants will be renovated. COVID put us back a little bit because we weren't able to do things for about a year, year and a half there, the renovations. But we're going to have everything redone.
That's awesome.
And most of them look great right now, but there's still some ones that need sort of renovation. We're also toying with some new technology, thinking about, because what we're trying to do and what we have to do in the restaurant is anticipate the guest needs, right?
Right.
What are they going to want tomorrow, next week, next year? So right now we're toying with some technology in a couple restaurants. We'll see how that plays out. But it's constantly trying to evolve. And that's what we spend so much time thinking about. Yeah, keeping what's important, the super burgers, keeping the great service, making sure that our team members are happy. This year we had 3 team members that celebrated 50 years of working at Eaton Park. And so a lot of the innovation is how can we help our team members have a more rewarding job, more rewarding career? And we've been doing that forever. But that's just, you can never forget about the importance of our team members and how good they are, and making sure that they enjoy and that they bring smiles to the guests' lives. And quite frankly, wake up every morning and they get up and they're happy to go to work and they're smiling. And that's really what's important. That's what I spend so much of my time thinking about, is how do I make our team members' lives better? And each and every day. So
fantastic. You know, and you bring a tremendous point, and it was sort of in what you just said there that I want to highlight. Innovation is one of those things that a lot of people, I'll say on the outside, they will take it for granted. Like, oh, they just did this, or they just added that. And that innovation comes from lots of thought, lots of questions, lots of debate, lots of going back and forth, deciding, should we launch this? Do we invest here? I mean, because everyone's resources financially are limited in some capacity. Yeah, you gotta make good decisions, right? And you can't be afraid to fail fast. I know that's something you've talked about. I say that all the time. Don't be afraid to fail and fail fast. You know, that way you can always pivot, but don't drag it out. And not making a decision is making a decision. That's another thing I feel very strongly about. But to the point there, to your point, you stick to the core values and the core of what you do, and making people happy and taking care of people, taking care of your customers, taking care of your team, but then also being there to innovate. And I think those are two really important but very different things. And it's probably really a recipe to your overall success. So I think that's
it. The innovation and care for people are two of our core values. So those are things that we talk about all the time. And it's really what's got us to where we are now and will lead us into the future.
You know, and on the core value thing, we share a couple in common, but I'm not smart enough to remember 5. I can only remember 3, but we did this in like 1994, I think. You know, I started the company 33, 34 years ago. And I saw it somewhere else. Like, hey, they say there's these things called core values. It's on a mission statement, real simple. So I picked. I didn't pick, but I felt like these three really symbolized who we were. It was respect. It was like respect for each other, respect for our clients, respect for the work in the industry, innovation. Always innovation. If you're not coming up with new stuff, you're like you said, you're dying. If you're not moving forward, and it's innovation on behalf of our clients, and then passion. And I feel like that's where the bulldoggedness comes from. I mean,
you
we're
have
very
that,
passionate.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I want that for our clients. We've had situations, and this is no joke, where we resigned working with a client because I said, I think I'm more passionate about your business than you are. And I wasn't trying to be a jerk when I say that, but I was like, I can't get excited about helping you succeed if you're like just mailing it in, looking for counting the days till retirement. I mean, that's not, you know, that's no place I want to be. So anyway, I totally empathize, respect what you're saying as far as your core values and living them. And it's one thing that we've done, I think, pretty well and stayed with. So one last question. I ask this of everybody, and we can't be a smiley cookie or a strawberry pie.
Okay.
It can't be your bistro. It's got to be something else. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
Oh, that's easy. Because I love this is interesting enough. My favorite food are tacos.
Wow.
Interestingly enough, we don't serve tacos at Eaton Park. We don't serve tacos at Hella Bistro. Every once in a while, we'll serve tacos at the porch. We serve a lot of tacos, interesting, at our Parkhurst locations. But I could have tacos breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Interestingly enough, I was at one of our college accounts yesterday, and I was not planning to stay for lunch. And I was walking through the servery, talking to the team members and just seeing how they're doing, because they've all just come back, right? College has just opened back up. And I walked over to one station. I'm like, oh, it's Tuesday, Taco Tuesday. And I literally was like, what am I going to do? So I took one, picked it up, I go in my car, I get it all down me because I'm like, I got to have this taco. And I was so bummed that I couldn't sit there and enjoy like a whole slew of tacos from the station. But I had to get one to go with me. I got back to the office. I had all down my front. But I could eat tacos, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I
just That's awesome.
Because you can always customize and you can put so many different things in them. And normally they're pretty easy to eat, right? You can eat them to go. Wouldn't recommend driving like I tried yesterday, but
So, that's your new innovation, driving tacos. You got to go come up with an innovation for driving tacos.
That's right.
So, well, that would fit. Jeff, as always, it's just fun. It's a pleasure. I could talk to you for hours, and this was great. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time today, and good luck with everything you're doing and continued success.
Michael, thank you. You're the best, and look forward to seeing you soon. So, as always, you're always the best to hang out with, and congratulations on your success as well. See you soon, my friend. Take care.
Thanks.